Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. I am your host, Brent Henderson, and remember that we are the resistance. Man, it's good to be back today, and today's going to be a great topic. It's going to be hard, it's going to be good, it's going to be hopefully educational, and something that a lot of men need. I think probably most men. And we've talked before about like the father wound and how difficult, you know, that is for a, you know, as a man gets, it's older and he's beginning to realize he had these areas where he felt inadequate, you know, insufficient, and just some things were missing. And so as I was thinking about the topic we were going to be doing for this podcast, I reached out to my Facebook. I have a private group called Unleashed Men. If you want to be a part of that, you can go on there and you can just kind of fill out the questions when you apply for it. And then you'll just kind of get accepted once you fill the questions out. But I asked the guys, I said, hey, what do you guys would like to talk about in some of these upcoming topics? And I got all kinds of stuff. You know, one of them was about, you know, I'm a divorced dad raising kids by myself, you know, help kind of a deal. You know, what do you do? It's difficult. There was one question that came in and it was more of a statement almost, but it was a help question. It was, you know, my father never taught me how to fix things. He never spent a whole lot of time with me. And as a result, I don't know how to do this stuff and I don't know how to pass it on to my kids. And then he just kind of said in capital letters, help with an exclamation point. I think it was three exclamation points. I get it. I totally get it. I think in one of my last episodes I talked about, I get this frantic phone call from our youngest, and she was home alone, and I was at a meeting with my pastor, and she said, hey, the upstairs bathroom is flooded. It's going down through the floor. You know, I jumped in my truck, got home, you know, and I spent a lot of time, several hours, trying to get this mess cleaned up. But once I got all the water dried up, I'm kind of like, you know, now what? You know, am I going to have to pull the carpet back and get fans in there? Am I going to have to replace the linoleum? And if I do, how do I do that? Am I going to have to call somebody? I was one of those kids who had a dad who kind of knew how to do everything. But he came out of that generation that they were pretty quiet. And he even told me at one point, he said that his dad was really quiet. His dad would be out in the garage, you know, working on cars and doing different things. But he didn't have that relational side with my dad. And so my dad, in his early parenting years, I think he just didn't know how to have that relational side with me. And again, it was here, hold the flashlight while I fix this, and then you can go out and play. And as a kid, you go, that's great. You know, I didn't have to go fix anything myself, and now I can go out and do whatever I want to do. But what it does is it leaves a gaping hole as a boy becomes a man, and he doesn't know how to do stuff. You know, luckily now we have things like YouTube. YouTube has become my friend. You know, I can get on there and I'll go in and try to figure out how to fix a lawnmower or a dryer or washing machine or whatever it is. But I hate having to have to do that. And it's kind of the joke around the house. You know, I was the musician, the writer, the speaker. But when it came to stuff like that, you know, I'm kind of a couple bricks shy of a full load. But, you know, it's difficult because I really didn't know how to do much of this stuff. And as you get older, you're going to face things you have to be able to do. I remember the wheel bearing going bad in the mower. I'm riding the mower and I'm looking down and I'm seeing this wheel kind of wobble. And I'm thinking, man, did the bearing go out? What happened to my wheel? Did the axle, is it break? What's happening here? And then to have to go and get a tune-up kit, you know, for springtime for my mower. And, you know, I have to get the oil filter, which means I got to change the oil on that. I got to get the fuel filter. I had to get spark plug and I was trying to get everything working and it wasn't working right. You know, so here I am going, now what? I just replaced all these things. Well, then maybe it's the coil. Well, where's the coil on this riding lawnmower? How do I replace that? You know, maybe it's the gas is bad and you've got to be able to drain all this stuff out. Well, do I have to siphon? You know, there's just all kinds of questions that, you know, you have to think through. And if you don't know the answer, you know, you can always ask somebody else or you can go on YouTube. But to be honest with you, when I go to some place like Lowe's and I need something and I know what it is, but I don't know what to call it, I feel like an idiot. And, you know, luckily, a lot of those guys there will say, hey, it's okay. I get it. You know, I grew up with this kind of stuff. A lot of guys didn't. But it leaves that wound that we have and it brings on a feeling of shame because we feel like it's something that we should know how to do, even though we weren't taught it. Because when we are around the company of other men, and they get to talking about, you know, engines or different things, and we're not sure what to talk about, we'll either retreat or we'll kind of pose. We'll change the subject and talk about something that we can make ourselves look good in, or we'll just start, you know, posing about, hey, wasn't that a 396 SS you had in that? What was the compression ratio on? I mean, just things that we really have read about, but we have no idea what we're talking about. And we just kind of pray and hold our breath that no one's going to ask us, you know, any more in-depth questions. But it's that, you know, every boy wants to know that he's going to grow up to be a strong man, and he wants to be the hero. I mean, that's what every little boy wants to grow up to be, the hero in the story. And as we get older, if we can't do things like basic things, like fix things, we don't feel like a hero. We feel like a zero. I had a picture for a long time. It was in my office, and it was a man dressed up with all of his armor on, with his sword on, this white stallion, and he's riding out to go to battle. And his lover is reaching up, and she's tying her colors onto his arm. And it was this sign of, you know, you are my knight in shining armor, and I'll be here when you come back. Any man will go into battle for a woman. That's the power that a woman has on a man. But in the everyday battles that we have, you know, how do we fix these things when they break? How do I talk to my wife when really all I want to do is fix her so this conversation can be over? Let's be honest. We don't know how to listen well. We listen to respond rather than listening to really hear, because we are so afraid in that conversation that if they say something that makes us feel less than a man, we're going to get defensive and we're going to start listing all the things that we do well rather than listening to what their heart is saying. Here's what I need from you. Even my wife will tell me, it's kind of the joke, like I said, when it comes to fixing things, YouTube is my friend. But the fact that I'm willing to go and do that makes me the man on the horse riding into battle. We all have to learn how to do things sometime, somewhere. But if we don't know how to do it, again, we'll become the poser. You know, and when we don't know how to do these things, rather than feeling like that knight in shining armor, we begin to feel more like the water boy, right? And that's our place. We're only good enough to be able to offer some water to someone who's really, you know, in the game, to a real man. And so we become the poser. And why do we become the poser? By putting those things out there that we're really good at and never letting anyone see our deficiencies. It's because the poser, we think it gets respect from others because we're only putting that good side of us out there. Even though it's based on deceit, it's working for us. We're getting something out of it. And that's why a lot of us will do that. So, you know, as a kid, the whole thing with getting our identity from the poser or getting it from somewhere else, many, you know, young boys will get their identity, you know, from their dad, you know, how big or tough or how much money he's got or what these things are. And it might start off with a comment, something like, you know, my dad could kick your dad's butt. Or, you know, my dad makes more money than your dad. Or, you know, my dad, whatever, you know, you fill in the blank, whatever that is. And I think you know what I'm talking about. But one of the dangers of fathers not bringing or initiating their sons into this masculine journey is that the son will never feel like he can live up to the expectations of the father, and he'll never be good enough. You know, so as a result, you know, he'll find himself getting into all kinds of trouble. You know, he'll be now, you know, racing in the street. He'll be, you know, sleeping around, fighting, partying, all this kind of stuff. And he gets, before he knows it, he's trapped in this performance-based mentality where he's masculine, he's good enough if he can fill in the blank. So it's difficult because these things are expectations, and sometimes they're unrealistic expectations, but we feel them. And so we feel like we have to be able to live up to this stuff. We know whether it's fixing something, whether it's balancing a budget, whether it's, you know, being a better lover to your wife, being a better, you know, parent to your children, you know, whatever. And if we find that we are struggling doing those things for our own kids, like maybe our fathers did for us, we begin to resent it. It was probably about the age, I think I was about 10 years old, and my parents, they would leave me alone. I was about the age where I could, you know, back, it wasn't like it is now, you know, where we're afraid, lock your doors, you've got, you know, guns stored in different rooms in the house or whatever because of the culture, honestly, that what we were dealing with now. But they would go to dinner with some of their friends, and mom would put in a TV dinner. I don't know where my sister would be, probably at a friend's house somewhere. I think she was old enough to have a boyfriend by then. But I would go and I would, you know, put on like one of these science fiction theaters, you know, back in our den where the television was. And once the sun would go down, it would get a little bit spooky being by myself at that age. And my first gift was a BB gun. And that BB gun was something that I carried with me all the time. And when I was in the woods, I always had it with me. It was a Crossman. Remember the pellet gun? You know, you could kind of take and you'd pump the thing up, and it could be pretty powerful. I mean, you could shoot these pellets out of there. They were almost as strong as like what a 22 was. But when my parents would leave, you know, and the TV dinner was done and science fiction theater would be going on, I'd start hearing sounds, you know, around the house. It could have been the furnace, you know, kicking on. It could be the house settling, whatever it was. But my dad, being a school teacher, he was a disciplinarian. He was pretty strict, great teacher, but he would have some guys that didn't like him, of course, like any teacher will have. And because they would know where we lived, not too far away, we were about a mile away from the school. You know, sometimes they would come and do things, you know, throw snowballs at the house, all kinds of stuff. They lit a corn stalk. My father had a bunch of corn stalks, you know, tied together at Halloween one year. And someone came and lit it on fire, and it fell against the house, and you know the whole side of the house was black. Luckily, it didn't catch anything on fire. They would take rocks and put them in snowballs and throw them at the picture window, just eggs, you know, stuff like that. And being left alone at the age of 10 was pretty spooky for me. And so I would get this BB gun, and I can remember I'd get the thing all pumped up. You know, they'd say you pump it 10 times, I'd go 15 or whatever it was, trying to get as much power out of it. As I could. And it's kind of funny because one time I can remember hearing something and couldn't make sense of what it was. And so I went and got in the bathroom and I started talking like I was an adult, trying to act bigger than what I was and threatening whatever the noise was, you know, I'll shoot you, whatever this thing was. But that was the poser. It began. And so it was like trying to be bigger than what you are, trying to be something that you're not, and not wanting that person or others to know that you really don't know what you're doing here, that you really are afraid, and you're afraid to step into this. And my dad wasn't a hunter. He wasn't a fisherman. He didn't lift weights. He didn't know how to fight. You know, all the kind of things that I love to do and I've been doing for years, that wasn't his area. And so he typically wouldn't make himself real available in those areas because he didn't know how to do it. And just like all of us, if we don't know how to do something, sometimes it's easier just to ignore it or walk away, act like it's not really there or happening, so we don't have to be exposed, that we don't know what we're doing. And my dad was no different when that stuff. And I'm thankful. My dad did take me hunting and fishing a few times, and great memories. We never really saw or caught much, but great memories because my dad was willing to go out and do those things with me. But it wasn't like an everyday thing. I can remember I wrote a song years ago. It was back in the 90s. I had recorded, I think it was off of my Brother to Brother album. I think which one it was on. And it was a song called Love is Spelled Time. And the first verse said, I used to have a best friend when I was growing up. I remember when he showed me his brand new baseball glove. I thought he was so lucky until I heard him say, I wish my dad could take the time and teach me how to play. The chorus went on, love is spelled time, love is spelled time. It's something you spend, not something you buy. Before time is gone, I hope you will find, in the eyes of a child, love is spelled time. And it is true. Love is spelled time. My dad would go out and spend time with me. But when that song was written, you know, dad would get home from school. I can remember him saying he needed to take just a little nap. As an adult, now I understand that you want to go take 10 or 15 minutes on the couch, kind of tip your head back, close your eyes or whatever. And then he would start grading papers. Well, you know, as a kid, you got all the energy in the world. I'm going to ask God someday, why did you do it backwards? Why did you give the kids all the energy? But I would come walking in and dad would be, you know, grading papers. And I'd say, Dad, can we play catch? Well, let me finish this. And then I got to do this. And then maybe after dinner. And so we'd eat and I'd be begging him to go outside. And, you know, he was exhausted, but I'd drag him outside, and my dad didn't even know how to play catch. He never played sports when he was young. And he'd throw the ball, you know, three or four times. And dad, it was kind of comical now when I think back about how, what was that movie, Leave Their Own or whatever it was, you throw like a girl, I am a girl. But my dad didn't know how to throw very well. And so it was kind of like, Dad, let's kind of get done quick before the neighbors see you throwing or any of my buddies seeing you try to throw a ball here. But he would, you know, he went out and bought me a ball glove, and we would play catch, not for very long. And then he'd say, you know, I really need to get back in and finish, you know, grading these papers or whatever it was he was doing. And so I would take that baseball and I would go exchange it for a tennis ball. And I'd go to the other side of the house where it was more flat, and I would throw the tennis ball, you know, down along the foundation of the house where it was cement block, and bounce it back to myself and play catch. It's too bad that as kids, we couldn't really know what we were feeling to be able to say to our fathers, Dad, I need this. And I can remember too, when I got started in the martial arts, and my dad, you know, like I said, he was pretty passive. Was fighting was never going to be okay. And I mean, I think there's a place, you know, for, hey, I teach your children to not be fighters, but when they need it, they need to know how to fight. And he didn't know. So that never got passed on. So some of those circumstances when it was needed and he didn't know how to do it, I went and got in the martial arts, stayed in it for a number of years because I wanted to know how to be able to defend myself. And I think some of that's because I didn't know how to do all these other things. I wanted to know how to protect myself, maybe from being made fun of because I didn't know how to do this stuff. Who knows? I mean, think about the emotions. You know, for men, when we think about, you know, being relational, what's the two emotions that men are allowed to kind of express? Well, joy, like the Final Four, either if your team just won or whatever it was, or anger. You know, that's kind of masculine. It's kind of testosterone filled. It kind of shows that masculine side of you. And if you feel angry, then you kind of feel almost affirmed in your masculinity because you're going, hey, that's kind of a masculine thing that if called upon, I can use that. But we kind of grew up with seeing, like for me as a kid, Batman. There was Superman. But Batman was my hero. In first grade, I remember I was in the hospital for maybe a month or so, and they got me a Batman costume. And I put the thing on, and I can remember running around the hospital room pretending that I was this superhero. And, you know, when you think about today, we call a lot of people heroes. And again, I don't want to take anything away from someone who has you know, pulled someone out of a burning car, fought for our country. I mean, they're heroes in those aspects. But when I'm thinking about heroes, yes, those qualify, but I want to talk about life heroes, the kind of heroes that don't get all the glory, the kind of ones that you don't hear a lot of their stories. And, you know, my hat's off to all you veterans out there who served, and I know it's hard for you guys to be able to share some of those stories that most of us will never know how you really did put it all on the line. And again, thank you for your service. But when I think about the everyday heroes that kind of get missed, these, you know, sometimes they might be, you know, someone who might have stopped an armed robber in an instance where lives were in danger and they step up. But that might be one of the only things that they ever realize is being a hero. Rather than the everyday stuff is, you know, how do I lead my wife and my children spiritually, consistently? That's a hero in my book, because it is not easy. You know, we get busy with life and we forget that our role is to love our families, to teach them, to mentor them, and to live what we're teaching them. But we get quiet, especially if we feel like we're not living up to those things that we're going to be teaching. Well, we better not say them out loud, because now the microscope's kind of, we're under that. And we have to kind of look at ourselves and going, you know, I'm really not fulfilling what my role is here. You know, maybe it's doing the things with your kids that you're not good at. Maybe it is going out and playing catch or hunting or fishing or teaching your children how to, you know, balance a budget, how to listen to their wife, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's all kinds of heroes, but that everyday hero is something that's missing, because this generation, and maybe the last couple of generations, haven't really been initiated into manhood. I don't know how else to say that, into authentic masculinity. We find ourselves, like I said, becoming the poser just to try to feel masculine, because we were never told that we had what it takes and shown and taught. Because, you know, you can keep trying to tell yourself, I'm good enough. But when you can't fix stuff, you know in that area that you're inadequate. You don't know what to do. So you will feel like you're not good enough. And it's a lot easier to teach, you know, a child how to be able to do things than it is to be able to untangle all these wounds when he gets later in life. So, you know, what did Jesus do? And what Jesus did was he He initiated them by deeply investing in them. He taught them. He loved them. He equipped and empowered, the disciples. He sends them out, right? He tells them, where to be going and what to do, what to ask for, what you need to be able to be looking for. And he gives them the power to be able to, fight against the enemy. He's given them his name. He's giving them the power of all heaven that they're able to, with their faith, move mountains. All they have to do is speak it in his name. And the majority of Jesus' efforts, when you go back and you look at it, was they were directed toward the 12 disciples. And I think that's really important because as men, we're going, I don't know how to do this life alone. And Jesus shows us you're not supposed to be doing it alone. You need to have that band of brothers that you're walking with. It's not just enough to be able to go, I received Christ, I prayed the sinner's prayer, whatever, and now I'm a believer, and I teach how to untangle, unhealthy thoughts. I've talked about that in some of the past episodes. But there's a lot more to the masculine journey, this crisis in masculinity that we're talking about. And it's, you might be able to fix a tractor. You might be able to renew your mind with scriptures that you know how to find because you were taught how to do that. But relationally, you don't know how to walk with a band of brothers, how to get a band of brothers together, how to be open and honest, how to hold each other capable of making, good choices to make it a safe place for that other man. It's a lot easier to go, here, take that 3/8 socket and put on that. You'll put a little WD-40 on it. It'll come out in about 3 minutes. You'll get it out. That's easy. But relationally, opening yourself up to the company of men, exposing those areas where you don't know how to fix something, you don't know how to do something, you're struggling in your marriage, maybe you're struggling in your sexual life, and that's something you're so ashamed about, you don't know what to talk about. But when you are in the company of men who really don't care what others think about them, and they care more about you than they do your sin, now you have a place where you can talk about anything. Like when I went to Lowe's the other day and I told this guy, I'm not sure what it is, the part that I'm called, and he told me what it was, and he goes, yeah, no worries. He made me feel safe. And then I could ask more questions, and guess what? Then I learned what it was called, then I learned how to be able to do it, and now I can pass that same thing on to my kids. So Jesus, he taught us how to initiate these men on a daily basis by loving them, teaching them, sending them out, all these things. And it's that laying down our lives for others that makes us the hero. It's not just that running into the burning building, although that is heroic. But the everyday heroes, you're the hero in your story. Now, who else could be? God put you here for this time, for his purposes, with the gifting, the way that he has made you. And he is going to use that. That's a big part of your purpose. Knowing your masculinity is a part of what's going to help you fulfill your purpose, because God made them male and female. He made them in the beginning. So you're the hero in your own story. But here's the thing. Are you willing to engage to get plugged into that story even when you feel inadequate? Because you don't get knowledge from nowhere. You only know something when you know it. And that means laying down your willingness to be embarrassed about something so that you can learn it, so now you can own it and you can pass it on. But one of the most powerful, I think, things that Jesus taught us in initiating, teaching men, what does that look like to be the hero? The disciples, they've been arguing, who's the greatest, all this kind of a thing. Like most men, we want to know, am I better than you? Am I bigger, badder, have more money, more education, whatever. But what's the example that Jesus is giving in these verses throughout the New Testament? What does he do? He doesn't go out and have a list. Hey, look at how many, demon-possessed people that I healed here. Look at how these women, caught in adultery, I was able to forgive and set their feet on a different. Those are all great things. And they were written about by others. But what's the example that Jesus does? First of all, he's serving those people, right? He's going out and he's healing them. He's not trying to get money from them. He's not trying to become popular and get a platform and have a podcast on YouTube or Spotify or whatever. He's serving. But what does he do with the disciples that's like the ultimate? He gets down and he washes their feet. And understand, in that culture, you know, feet are very dirty. You know, you're on the ground all the time. And he humbles himself. If you want to be the greatest, he talks about, you know, be like one of these children. But the message he's saying is you have to serve. It's not all about, you know, putting yourself out there to be the hero, to look the part in order to be the part. If you serve others, you will be the hero, because you're doing exactly how Jesus did it. Some of the memories that I have of my dad, you know, like I said, he didn't do a lot of things I like to do. So I never kind of looked at him through that lens of being, you know, a great athlete or a great hunter or fisherman, things that I kind of hold up, you know, myself. He was consistent. He worked hard. He supplied the family with everything we needed. We never had to worry about, you know, being in financial straits, because he was incredibly responsible to make sure that we all had what we needed. You begin to appreciate that, you know, the older you get. And it's something now that I want to be able to model. You know, being in full-time ministry like this, guys, and this is what I do. I speak to men all the time. It is my calling. There's no question about that. It's been affirmed by so many different times. And I'm thankful. I love it. Absolutely love and passionate about reaching, you know, men for Christ. And by the way, let me say this now, kind of while we're at it. You know, if you're watching the Unleashed podcast, it's free, and I'm glad. And I want to keep doing these until I take my last breath. Seriously, I'll probably be doing a podcast in the hotel or in a hospital room somewhere. All right, get over here, honey. But Unleashed Plus is something that I created, and you can find that if you go to unleashed.men. You'll find my Unleashed page, and you'll see something called Unleashed Plus on there, and you can become a part of that. These podcasts we're doing, I'm breaking them down, and I'm doing small group studies out of them. There's free prizes every month. You can get a free download of my book that's over there, that Into the Wilds, and the audiobook. I mean, there's all kinds. There's, if you guys love whitetail hunting, there's Whitetail Wisdom Series you can get in. And it's $9.99 a month. I think it's $99 for the year. But what that really is doing, it's supporting us. Just like you have Compassion International, you know, they're putting the packets out to help, you know, supply and feed these kids. That's my calling, is to feed men, is to help them understand who they are in Christ and then give them what they need to do battle. I always say we are the resistance. Well, you can't be resisting the enemy if you don't know how to do battle. So that's what Unleash Plus really is about. It's going to be helping disciple men to go and do the same thing. And there's some exciting stuff on there. So anyhow, go to that and you'll find it on there. We'd love to have you be a part of that resistance through Unleash Plus. And for those of you that want to be able to give, you want to go to a 501c3, you'll find it on there as well. It's called World Renewal. And you'll just look at my page. I think if you click on the link on there, it'll take you right to it. And we need your support. We really do. Because this is what we're called to, and this is what I do full time. Anyhow, men have lost the vision. They have lost the ability, the understanding of how to initiate their sons into becoming men. And we've left it up, frankly, we've left it up to the media. We've left it up to social media. We left it up to TikTok or Facebook or the Reels and everything that we watch. And you see, and it's kind of disgusting, because I watch some of these Reels and different things, and I see, you know, young women on there, you know, dressing as skimpy as they possibly can, just trying to get likes. You know, the question that she's got is, am I enough? You know, that's a woman's question. All a man is, do I have what it takes? And so she's dressing this way or acting promiscuous or whatever to get a man's attention. And I see guys on there all the time, you know, trying to make full court shots with basketballs, or, you know, they're parkour and they're jumping all over the place and doing flips or motocross and all this stuff. And I love the adventure. It's all kind of fun. But when our eyes are constantly seeing people doing those kind of things and they're amazing, we begin to compare ourselves to that. And when we can't do it, there becomes to be this crisis in masculinity, a crisis in femininity. We're trying to model our lives after what we're seeing in the media. And the media is tainted. It is not the authentic version. And now they don't even know, you know, would you identify what a woman is? And they can't answer that question. Seriously? I can answer it real quick. So let me ask you a question then. We were talking about this crisis of masculinity. We're talking about heroes and the everyday heroes, how Jesus was a hero. How many of you had heroes growing up? Can you remember who they were? How many of you long to be the hero in your story, you know, in the one that you're living right now? How many of you want to be that hero? How many of you feel like you're failing at that? I think if we're stuck being the poser, we don't feel like we're failing. But when we look in the mirror and we look under the hood, we know we've got some growing to do. If you don't feel like you're the hero in your story, you don't feel like you're good enough, where is that voice coming from? Why do you feel like you need to pose to be the hero? Like I said, we see a lot of that on social media, and we think we have to be like that. And when that being the poser works for you, you're going to keep doing it because you're getting something out of it. It's filling a need that you think that you have to have that should be getting filled by God. But we take our question to Eve. We take our question to our kids. We take it to other men, when really understanding that our identity is in Christ is our roar within. That is where all of this can come from. Why would I care? I have to look on YouTube. I wasn't taught it. There you go. I shouldn't know how to fix something if I was never taught. And guess what? I'm going to pick myself up by my bootstraps here. I'm going to go learn how to fix that, and I'm going to do it. And guess what? I'm going to feel better for it. And guess what else? It's going to get the respect of others when they understand what's going on, because they're going, he was willing to do whatever it takes to be able to learn how to do this stuff. I have a lot of respect for men and women out there that are willing to do that. So, and not only does the hero within us be that daily serving thing that we see, and I was talking about getting the respect, you know, of others when we do that, it's pouring into them and saying, I saw this in you. You know, one of the things that I used to struggle with, and I have to be careful at times because, you know, I've had so many great stories I shared about it on last week's podcast, is when someone else, whether it was one of my kids or another man or someone, is telling some really cool story, something that they got to be a part of or whatever, and next thing you know, you're telling a story to one-up them. Why in the world would I feel like I need to one-up somebody? Because that's their story. Why would I need to step in and try to steal the glory? Usually when that happens, you can spot when someone's feeling, you know, pretty insecure, when their worth and value is coming from what other people think about them. And so I think I robbed my kids sometimes, you know, rather than, hey, watch what your dad did. Look at this big buck that I shot. Look at this big fish. Look at the size of my whatever, you know, my muscles. And the kids are going, what about me, Dad? The other day, 14-year-old, you know, Emma came in, and she's been playing tennis. And about 2 years ago, when she was running, we kind of laughed because she was a little bit awkward when she would run. Well, now she's been, you know, tennis practice every day. She's been doing all this stuff. And she came in from her first, like, big match or whatever it was from tennis. And she came in the door, and she grabbed me by the arm and pulled me outside. She goes, I want you to see how fast I can run. And she took off running down the street, and I was cheering her on. You know, the thing I think I like about getting older is I really don't care so much anymore what people think about me, but I really do care about seeing others feel good about themselves and succeeding. And we owe it to our kids and those around us. That is being the hero in the story. When they come to you and they want to see you watch them do something, that means you're safe. And it means that you mean something to them, that they want to bring that to you. So guys, we need to learn how to be the hero in these stories. You know, we need to be these warriors. And on my shirt, this is, matter of fact, if you want to get some of these shirts, just reach out to me through the Unleashed Men website. You'll see there's a place on there to send an email as well. And you can get these. It says, you know, when you sit with warriors, it says the conversation is different. Just like what we're talking about today. This is what matters. But the Bible, you know, God was talking about, you know, these warriors. And he says, you know, what God says about you, you know, Exodus, it's in chapter 15, verse 3. It says, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. And I love that God says, you know, he's a warrior, and that we were given that same heart is what God does. We were created in his image. And the author, John Eldridge, I think it was in, was it The Way of the Wild Heart or The Wild at Heart? It was one of those, or maybe it was in both of them. He follows up that verse because we talk about how every little boy wants to know he's someone dangerous, someone to be reckoned with. Well, if we're initiating men into this company of men who know Christ and are living out their true purpose, you know, they've been unleashed, it's important for the boy to know that he is a warrior. And John says, you know, the boy is a warrior. The boy is his name. When God made man, when he made a boy, he made him masculine. He made him strong for righteous reasons. And guys, we've lost that. There's a crisis in masculinity we're seeing in this country like never before. And we need to initiate our sons into the company of other men. We have to, guys, we have to reawaken that fierce quality within our sons. We have to initiate them into what authentic manhood really looks like. We have to help them discover that it's connected to a higher purpose, something greater than themselves. Because this generation is all about living for YouTube, living for, you know, TikTok and Reels. It's about teaching them how to find their place in the battle that is something greater than themselves. And we have to invite them into a company of men. We have to invite them into a brotherhood. You know, we few, we happy, we band of brothers. It's time to initiate our sons into the resistance. And man, I do believe you have what it takes. And it is time to train our sons how to become unleashed. We'll see you next time.